And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Phil Conlon is away. Phil is, I think, assisting unions to on behalf of the poor and the oppressed, et cetera. I think somebody named et cetera. Anyway, coming up, I want to remind everybody that tonight at 7 o'clock, 24 Main Street in Hamilton, Rabbi David Miviser is talking about his recent work on the West Bank and occupied territory and his being arrested there by Israeli authorities. He's giving a talk at 7 o'clock in Hamilton, 24 Main Street. And on May 30th, Thursday, 7 p.m., Ted Schmidt is speaking at the Bloordale United Church, 4258 Bloor Street West. And that is Ted Schmidt. He has a new book, I Was a Catholic Zionist. And on June the 1st, 3 o'clock, Al-Quds Day, 361 University Avenue. And that's again 3 o'clock. And today we're going to be talking to Dimitri Lascaris and to Ann Garrison in Berkeley. And I think Dimitri Lascaris is with us. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Phil. Thank you for having me on.
Well, David, it's glad to be talking to you. Incidentally, people can find David Lascaris just on Twitter and, of course, davidlascaris.org, I believe. David, you're going to be speaking, I believe, on June the 1st at Al-Quds, this demonstration, which has become an annual event in Toronto. It's usually well attended. What's going to be your message, if you could give us an idea? What do you think is important to be saying on Al-Quds Day?
Just before I answer your question, you referred to me as David. I think you're confusing me with my friend David Mivis there.
Yeah, it's I'm your good friend David. Yes, it's Dimitri.
Dimitri,
my apologies.
That's okay. So I'm going to be the keynote speaker at this year's event. I'm honored to be offered that opportunity. I think I'm still pondering one of the many messages that I could communicate in the limited time that's available to me. But I think the core message I want to communicate is that there's a certain words are difficult to find to express the injustice of the way defenders of Israel go about silencing those of us who condemn Israel's human rights violations. What they do is they falsely accuse us of racism and support for terrorism, when frankly that's exactly what they are manifesting. There is, by any rational definition of terrorism, overwhelming evidence that the state of Israel and particularly its military are engaged in acts of terror against the Palestinian civilian population, at least in the occupied territories. And there's absolutely no doubt, from the perspective of anybody who has the remotest idea about what's going on in the occupied territories and who is objective, that Israel has instituted a regime of apartheid, which is the second worst crime against humanity after genocide. And it's not just me who's saying this. This has been said by David Hurrell, who's the vice president of the Academy of Sciences and Arts in Israel. It's been said by Noam Chomsky. He has said, that it's much worse than apartheid, what's being done to the Palestinian people in the occupied territories. This has been said by Richard Falk, one of the world's leading international law jurists. He said the evidence that Israel is committing the crime of apartheid is overwhelming. That's his word. Mm-hmm. And this has been said by John Dugard, a human rights lawyer and a former UN official who lived under apartheid. He was white. He had the privilege of being a white person in South African apartheid regime. But he saw with his own eyes what was being done to black South Africans. And he has said publicly that what's being done to the Palestinians is much worse. So when people who defend Israel accuse advocates for Palestinian rights of racism and support for terrorism, they really need to take a look in the mirror, because they are the ones who are advocating for a racist regime and for acts of terror.
Mm-hmm. And this matter of Al-Quds, which is this is an area which we have the three religions most prominent from our world, okay, Islam, Christianity, Judaism. The initiative has been taken on the part of the United States most recently, and at the behest and wishes of the present leader of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. They moved their embassy. This has caused a lot of, it seems to me, to indicate a kind of a dangerous commitment on the part of the U.S., and others seem to be following their lead. Brazil is talking about it. We have the leader of the Conservative Party in Canada, Mr. Scheer, says that he will move the embassy. I mean, that's a serious provocation, isn't it? I mean, it's like eliminating Palestinian rights.
It is a serious provocation. You know, the East Jerusalem is home to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the third holiest site in Islam. Of course, it's of tremendous importance to members of the Christian faith as well. And under international law, at the time that the United Nations adopted this unjust partition plan, which saw a majority of historic Palestine, of the territory in historic Palestine, go to a Jewish population, which was overwhelmingly an immigrant population, and a minority of the population go to a majority Palestinian population who had been there with their ancestors for centuries. Even within that plan, which Israel has exploited to the hilt in order to create its own ethnocracy, it was stipulated that Jerusalem would be, you know, to use the Latin term, a corpus separandum. It was supposed to be a separate city with an international status under international control. And neither side, neither the Jewish inhabitants of Israel or historic Palestine, nor the Palestinians were to have control over that city. It was supposed to be, its fate was supposed to be determined by negotiation and further consideration by the international community. Israel, while it exploited the partition plan from the moment it was adopted, flouted the part of the partition plan that stipulated this special status for Jerusalem, and began over time, immediately from the time the partition plan was adopted, over time to encroach upon more and more of Jerusalem. And in 1967, over 50 years ago, it succeeded in getting control of East Jerusalem, where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is. And some 10 to 15 years later, it purported to annex East Jerusalem in flagrant violation of international law. And there has been an enormous body of international jurisprudence which has recognized the illegality of Israel's annexation of East Jerusalem. And in fact, it shouldn't have sovereignty over any part of Jerusalem without the consent of the international community and the Palestinian people. That is a provocation, and it is a frontal assault on international law.
Yeah, and isn't it a kind of sound and fury signifying nothing in terms of international law and how this matter is ever going to be resolved? I mean, the question of the capital that's at the end of the line of any appropriate negotiations or understanding of two equal partners, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, in a strange, perverse sort of way, Donald Trump has all done us all a favor, because the reality is that successive administrations in the United States were only paying lip service to the notion that Jerusalem was a corpus separandum. It's true that they weren't prepared to move their embassy there, which was a significant symbolic act of restraint on the part of prior U.S. administrations. But they allowed Israel to get away with formally annexing East Jerusalem. They allowed Israel to get away with imposing severe restrictions on Muslims' access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They allowed Israel to get away with putting settlements in East Jerusalem, which were a flagrant violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. What Trump has done, unwittingly, is he's basically lifted the veil on U.S. policy and shown us that they were never a neutral arbiter to begin with in this dispute, and that they were always doing everything they could in successive U.S. administrations to enhance the Zionist project of ethnic cleansing and apartheid.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Dimitri Lascaris at dimitrilascaris.org. And, of course, you can find him on Twitter, at Dimitri Lascaris. And today's Globe and Mail has a very peculiar front page story. I don't know if you saw it, but it says Netanyahu plans lasting tribute for Putin-Trump election help. Very strange, because on this matter of Jerusalem, they intend to put some sort of memorial to the defense of Leningrad in Jerusalem. And the story is written with a straight face as though they really expect that Putin will come there. I haven't seen any indication in Russia or China or other members of the Security Council and have any such intentions, or to, because this is obviously the way the Globe writes it. Putin and Trump are going to play along with this takeover of Jerusalem. Well, I shouldn't say takeover, the movement of the embassy.
Well, I must say I've seen absolutely no indication that Putin's government, whatever his flaws or virtues may be, is going to accede to the move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, or that, you know, he will, that Putin's government will sanction Israel's illegal annexation of East Jerusalem. I see absolutely no indication of that. Mm-hmm. It is true that, you know, Putin has somehow managed to maintain a constructive relationship with Netanyahu's government. They do seem to be in regular contact. They do seem to have an ongoing dialogue. Mm-hmm. There is a very large expatriate Russian community, Russian Jewish community within Israel. And Putin has effectively given, or at least to a degree, given Israel the green light to attack Iranian targets within Syria, even though there are very significant Russian forces present there. So the relationship, it's hard to really understand what's going on from the outside, but the relationship between Putin's government and Netanyahu's government is complex. And there's certainly, it's certainly not a purely adversarial relationship. There is a degree of cooperation going on there. But as I said at the outset, I've seen no indication whatsoever that Putin would go so far as legitimizing in any way the annexation of East Jerusalem or the move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem.
Yeah. Well, also because he's the alleged villain in Syria, which would hardly match his work of there. Which he surprised the U.S. by calling their bluff, in a sense. Again, it's Dmitry Lascaris. And Dmitry, of course, we would be remiss if we don't mention the other Trump move, which is to recognize Israel's annexation of Golan. And of course, the matter with Jerusalem, moving the embassy is provocation enough, but that the Golan, that's very close to inciting a war.
Well, it is. I mean, what Israel has done is an act of war. Annexing the Golan Heights is a frontal assault on Syrian sovereignty. And it's just one, you know, it's perhaps the most egregious example, but it's just one of countless examples of Israel violating the sovereignty of Syria. Whatever you think of the Assad regime, Israel clearly has committed countless acts of aggression against the sovereign state of Syria by launching attacks, air attacks. And it's admitted this. It's admitted that it's launched, you know, dozens and dozens of air sorties in Syria. It does that routinely. It's also done that to Lebanon. You know, we often focus, and I think rightly so, on the plight of the Palestinian people. But Israel is a far more nefarious force than that within the Middle East, because it is not only engaging in violations of the human rights of Palestinians, it is running roughshod over international law in the Middle East with respect to Lebanon, with respect to Syria. It's violated, it's committed acts of aggression against Iran. And by the way, this is not an apology in any way, shape, or form for the human rights violations of the Iranian government, but the fact is that Israel has committed acts of aggression against Iran. Israel has the only nuclear arsenal in the Middle East. It's the only state in the Middle East that refuses to accede to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And it is falsely claiming, the CIA and the International Atomic Energy Association have both repeatedly acknowledged that Iran is not seeking to build a nuclear weapon, and Israel is falsely asserting that it is, and using that as a pretext to foment a war between the United States and Iran, and we're perilously close to doing that right now. So the point I want to make is that, you know, this illegal annexation of the Golan Heights is really just part of a larger pattern of utter disregard for the sovereignty of other states in the region that we've seen from Israel, and a really dangerous, almost relentless violation of the sovereignty of these states which is destabilizing the region to a frightening degree, frankly.
Mm-hmm. It's Dimitri Lascaris as our guest, and Dimitri is going to be speaking June the 1st at 3 at a rally that begins at the opposite the U.S. Embassy, 3 p.m., 361 University Avenue, and that's a Saturday. And Dimitri, on your Twitter account, you are noted, identified as an indignant citizen. I know that you share, certainly, but my perspective, an indignation. We can't find any party leaders or parties of Canada who take these matters up. This involves peace and war. It involves the justice and rights of the Palestinian people. It involves the issue of reining in a reckless superpower, which I think 80% of Canadians consider the U.S. government at this time very dangerous. But we don't have anyone speaking up on this. So you've commented on this on your website. But do you see any light on the horizon? I know Mr. Manley was elected in B.C. Maybe that's a hope. But what is wrong with the parties here?
Well, it's really what's wrong with our political system. We have a political system, the whole range of issues restrict the ability of people who are actually, and I think the majority of Canadians fit this description, people who actually understand the extraordinarily perilous circumstances in which we currently find ourselves, whether it's the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, whether it's the collapse of sovereign states, the creation of failed states, whether it's the climate crisis, the contamination of our water, our soil, overpopulation, this whole range of issues that we confront, which are of an existential nature, we don't have anybody in Parliament, at least at a leadership level, who is willing to address these issues effectively and within the necessary time frame, even though a majority of Canadians, I think, very much want that kind of action. And it's because our political system, it can be seen as a series of filters. Whether the media is one of those filters that prevent people who are truly revolutionary now in their outlook, which is what we need. We need revolution, mm-hmm. peaceful revolution. It prevents them from coming to power by demonizing them and vilifying them. It's the campaign finance system that we have, which allows wealthy people to have a disproportionate say in who actually becomes electable. It's the first past the post system that we have. It's just the fact that people who tend to be of a right wing view, they're the ones who are afforded the opportunities in life in the socially unjust society that we have to rise to positions of power. So we have a series of filters which are preventing people who represent the majoritarian view in this country from assuming positions of power. And that's been the case throughout the post World War II period, and I think it's worse now than it's ever been.
Yeah, isn't there also a kind of strange idea that comes usually from the party centers of a so-called real politic, and yet in Britain you had that, and they said, well, we'll let Corbyn be one of the nominees, a man who stands up for the Palestinians. And he came, he took over the leadership because the people clearly wanted him, and they weren't scared away by his ideas at all. They were attracted to them. Same in the U.S. with Bernie Sanders. Whatever he actually is, I mean, he's been saying some marvelous things that 10 years ago nobody said. But here, we can't seem to crack the subject open.
It is true. I mean, one would have thought 5-10 years ago that of those three countries, Britain, the United States, and Canada, we would be the first to see somebody like Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn, be in a realistic position to acquire power. But in fact, I think what we've come to learn over the last 5 years is that in some ways, our country is even more tightly controlled by a narrow, largely white Anglo-Saxon neoliberal elite than even those countries are. I mean, I don't know what other conclusion to draw from the fact that we're seeing it's not just Bernie Sanders in the United States, of course. We're seeing members of Congress.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. I mean, it's remarkable what's happened there within the last several years. But here, you know, there's been no comparable movement in that direction. And, you know, I think we face a real danger that we're going to see Andrew Scheer come to power. We've had to, you know, we've had the really disappointing.
And he will move the embassy. He says if he comes to power, he's going to do it.
Yes, he will. And that'll just be one small part of his right-wing agenda. And we're seeing the similar, you know, at a provincial level, we're seeing this play out now with Doug Ford. We're seeing it play out with, you know, Jason Kenney has just begun in Alberta. You know, although he's not quite as bad as Ford or Kenney, we have François Legault in Quebec. You know, this country, I mean, I'm kind of speechless. I spent most of my life here. I was born and raised here. And I'm deeply disappointed in the inability of our political system to adapt to the existential crisis we confront.
Yeah. Well, I think your writing, your speaking, your legal work is actually giving us some hope. And Dimitri Lascaris, we look forward to seeing you June 1, 3 o'clock, 361 University Avenue. I hope the Al-Quds demonstration is a success. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Phil.
Okay, bye-bye. Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. We're going to be talking in a little bit with Ann Garrison, but I think we probably have some music. I think his name is Morgan, or whomever turns up, we're going to like.